Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
From high atop the Tower of Orthanc in our remote studio, high above Mount Doom and the Land of Mordor. My name is Richard, KB5JBV, and welcome to Linux in the Ham Shack. We're glad everybody showed up. And let me introduce to you the gentleman on top of the Misty Mountains up there in Arkansas. That would be Russ, K5TUX. Say hello to everybody, Russ.
Hello, everybody, and good mushroom to the folks that are listening on the live stream and are hanging out with us in the chat room. And for those of us who are listening after the fact, this is Russ, K5TUX, live from between the peaks in the pine forest of north central Arkansas, the very comfortable, very soft, luxurious peaks this evening. After a very brutal summer, it's been a very nice early, not quite fall. How's it going for you down there as we start this episode number 91 of Linux in the Ham Shack?
Oh, well, it's second spring down here in Texas. Yes, second spring. We don't have a fall down here. We just have spring twice a year. All the things are blooming and the bugs are buzzing and the allergies are kicking. And yes, welcome to my own personal hell. On the lighter side, the wife and the daughter-in-law went out looking for some junior high kids to kill earlier this evening, and all my children are brain damaged. So that pretty much covers it. I'm losing sleep over quite a bit of this. But that's okay, because now we're here. Russ and I are here with our people. You are our people. Some of you are more our people than others, but for the most part, it's pretty level playing field. Sometimes we have more people, sometimes we have less people. And once in a great while, when Richard really goes off the deep end, we have no people. So now that we've situated and straightened out and discussed the people situation, what do we do next?
I don't know. You tell me.
Oh, well, they're sending some cool air down here to us. We ain't had none of that in months.
Yeah,
we went for a long time with hotness.
Yeah, it was the same up here. And like I said in the intro there, it's been very, very cool today. I think it's been like 70. Which is, I don't know, I think it's like 10 degrees below the average for this time of year, which I'm going to take.
Well, I'll tell you right now, it's 75 degrees Fahrenheit in Forney, Texas right now, and I think my thermometer is broke.
No, it's probably working just fine.
I had to take a Sharpie and mark the lines so it would get down to 75. They don't even sell a thermometer in Texas that reads less than 80 degrees. Seriously. Well, the great big glass ones that, I don't know, I've never actually looked at one.
Did you hit your head on the way to the microphone?
No. Why?
I don't know. You seem to be a little off.
No, that's the smell of the thermometers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. You guys in the chat room, y'all know about the glass thermometer, don't you? I know y'all do. Babysitter come at you with them on the coldest day of the year. Yeah, buddy. Okay, about enough of that, I guess. So, welcome to the show. We're going to try and get on to business. Rich is all stuffy and Russ is all stuffy, and we're going to do the best we can. So why don't we just jump into some real stuff, maybe? Yeah. What's wrong with the website certificate?
Well, this is only going to be of interest to those folks who have paid to be a subscriber to our show via the website, where you sign up and either pay $2 a month or $20 a year, whichever one you choose, and you get access to content that other people don't get access to and different feeds that other people don't get access to. As we've said before, the show is always going to be free in its, you know, normal format, its edited format with the music and all that good stuff. But if you want to hear the before and after, and you want to have access to alternative versions of the show and get a little insight into, you know, the Etherpad and the things we're going to talk about and all that kind of good stuff, you can sign up and help us out a little bit by becoming a subscriber.
So if they're not a subscriber, they don't get the parts where Richard acts badly.
That's correct.
Hmm.
And see, that's worth $2 a month right there.
I don't know.
Well, I think
I've been known to act badly for free.
Well, if you do, just make sure you do it away from the Linux and the Ham Shack website.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Anyway.
So what you're telling me is this first bit, they ain't going to hear anyway, because if they're not subscribed, they ain't going to hear it. And if they already subscribed, they don't need to hear it.
Oh, no. This will be heard by everybody. So.
Okay.
Basically what it was the certificate that I had, because when you log into the website, all of that stuff is secure, so you don't give out your password and all that kind of thing. That certificate had expired, so people might have been getting warnings and all kinds of, you know, danger Will Robinson kind of things when they went to the website. But I fixed that, and so that should no longer be happening.
I see.
Yes.
Let me address a question in the chat room. Yes, they do if you don't sterilize them. All right. So we would like to welcome new subscribers, Michael S. again. I'm not sure why, but Michael C. and Bill A. Speaking of our Bill is missing, and I'm going to admonish him right now in the podcast, because we're going to have to cut his pay or get rid of his health care plan or something. And my screen just went naked. Wait a minute.
Well, while you're trying to figure out how to put a bikini on your screen, let me just say that the reason that Michael S. is listed as a subscriber again is because he is now in his second year as a subscriber to the show. So he is our longest running subscriber so far.
Holy macro. Have we been doing that for a year?
More than a year.
I guess that's what I get for not reading the memos.
Speaking of memos, that kind of moves on to our little thing about the mailing list.
The mailing list.
Yes. We do have a mailing list. The link for that mailing list will be in the show notes, and it's already been in the show notes several times, and there's actually a link to it on the front page of the website now, so it's a little easier to find than it used to be. You need to go over there if you're a listener of the show and you're hearing my voice right now and sign up for the mailing list. We will not email bomb you with a bunch of stuff, but it is a way that we can get in touch with you, let you know when shows are going to air, when we or ambassadors are going to be at events, stuff like that. And you can actually get this stuff delivered to your inbox rather than having to come to the website all the time. So I would highly recommend that if you have an email address and you're a listener of this show, that you go to the LHSpodcast.info website, click on the link for the mailing list, and sign up if you haven't done so already.
Yes, sign up for the mailing list. Dang it.
Yeah, and Bill's not here. I know you've already pointed that out, but this is ridiculous. Where the hell are you, Bill?
I'm telling you, we need to sign him and take him off the good health plan, put him on HMO or something.
Yeah, he's what, up there somewhere between Chicago and Milwaukee? So if anybody up there knows where Bill is, go smack him around, wake him up, tell him he needs to get in the chat room and be a part of the show.
Go to whatever bar he hangs out in and knock the stool out from under him, or knock the stool out of him.
Knock something. I was trying to stop you from going there, but I guess I didn't get there in time.
Hit him with a pool cue. Something.
That's right.
Hey, Ball, wake up. Pow.
I don't know. We didn't skip a week that I forgot about or anything, did we?
No, we almost skipped a week last week because I was testing the limits of human flight.
No, that was 2 weeks ago.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The limits of human flight. Yes. I have not discovered anti-gravity yet, but I'm working on it.
Okay. Now, the last time I checked, and it looks like he's gone. He snuck out while I wasn't paying attention.
Who, Peter?
No, Scott.
Scott.
Yeah, Scott, N8VSI. Our friend Scott, who's a listener of the show and a very good friend, is N8VSI.
You probably need to cut what I just said out in the finished version because it's a bad word in Greek.
Oh, that's okay. If you swear in a language I don't understand, it's going to stay in.
Oh, well.
No, I probably shouldn't have said that out loud.
I'll be stuttering. I'll be studying Mandarin in the morning.
Oh, boy. Anyway, Scott, N8VSI, is going to be our ambassador at Ohio Linux Fest at the end of this month. So yeah. So if you get a chance to go out to Ohio Linux Fest, which is what, September 28th ish, something like that.
Or whatever Russ said.
Yeah. Anyway, go to www.ohiolinux.org. You'll find all the information there, and we will have a presence out there at OLF, a booth manned by Scott in N8VSI. So thanks, Scott. I was gonna thank him there in the chat room, but he's gone. He decided to leave on us. I'm sure he'll hear this later. That's right. Well, no, he's not fired because I can't make it out to OLF this year. So anyway,
okay, he's fired after OLF. OLF.
Yeah, we're gonna have to make sure this comes out after that or something. I don't know.
OLF.
Yeah. Anyway, go to Ohio Linux Fest.
You sure it's not in Minnesota?
What? OLF.
OLF.
Oh no, that's St. Olaf. That's in Minnesota. Yeah, it's where Betty White's from.
And we could go way off sideways on Jesse Ventura because he was on The View the other day, and but we ain't going there.
Probably the best governor ever. Anyway, do you have any? Do you have any things to add to our rambling first segment, or do we?
No, it's going to be one of them. I can tell you right now. But you better stick that affiliate thing in there because, that's a subject close to my heart because I've used that successfully in the past.
Okay, well, let me just go ahead and mention, since we're sitting here, you know, trying to get money out of people again, we're trying to squeeze them as much as we possibly can,
and being stupid while we do it.
That's right. It's very Keystone Cops here in segment one. I have signed up for the Namecheap.com affiliate program. This is an alternative to GoDaddy. It's a registrar. They also do hosting, sell cheap SSL certificates and all that kind of stuff. Things that like Media Temple and HostGator and other places do. And this is the place that I use for all of my domains and for my hosting since I have gotten away from GoDaddy.com. Because they're evil. So far, Namecheap has proven themselves to not be evil. Of course, this could change anytime in the near future. We don't know. But for the moment, they are a wonderful company who sells domains cheap, who has cheap hosting and all that kind of good stuff. And there's a banner on the website, our website. And, you know, you can go there and you can click on that. And if you have any particular hosting or domain registration needs, if you click on that through our website, we, of course, get a piece of that. Now, Richard has done this in the past using Amazon and some other places. Were you going to flesh that out for me?
No, I'm trying to figure out where it is. I don't see it.
Oh, it
go
it
ahead.
Yeah, it comes up randomly on the website. You won't see it every time. But if you happen to click on it, you know, when it comes up, feel free to use it. And we, of course, get a kickback from Namecheap anytime you register. Now, I'm probably going to go ahead and put the AdSense stuff from Google back on the website at some point. And I would like to encourage people that don't have the ability and the wherewithal to actually send us a donation to, you know, if you come to our website and you see one of those links or an affiliate link on the header or whatever, all you have to do is click on those links and we get a little bit of a kickback. And it doesn't come out of your pocket. It comes out of the whoever the sponsor is of the advertisement. So if you don't have enough money to send us a buck or two or whatever, just if you happen to go to the website, click on one or two of those, you know, affiliated links or one of the AdSense keywords, and that makes us money. and you can say you donated to the program and it didn't cost you a dime out of your pocket. So please do that if you get a chance. I don't know of any other way I can keep beating that into the ground. So
I'm just saying we probably need to kick you Black Sparrow guys off of here because I don't think they paid their bill in a long time.
Yeah, well, I could probably cut down the number of times that one shows up, but
these guys, I don't know.
They keep showing up a lot.
Yeah. No, not really. It's just, they ain't paid the freaking bill.
Well, I'll see what I can do about that.
You need to complain to somebody.
All right. We're boring people.
That mess belongs to somebody.
That's right. Well, we're boring people to death here. We should probably get some music going and then come back with some actual content because I actually found some in the last, half an hour. So what do you think about that?
Okay, I had some too, but we'll figure it out.
Go ahead. Let's make it quick.
No. I'm talking about the pink stuff. Go ahead and play the music.
All right. Well, I'm going to play a little bit of music here. Then we'll come back on the other side and we got some actual stuff that's not like, asking for money and all that kind of good thing. Anyway, send money. This is a song called A Little Time by a group named Not From Georgia. And I don't know if that means they just really don't like Georgia or what, but anyway, it's a pretty good song. So we'll be back in 4 minutes or so, give or take, and we'll talk about some stuff. Catch you in a minute.
Take a little time, close your eyes, don't despair. May take a little while, lose the past, breathe new air. You walked a different road for better times. Was there ever really more at the end of the line? Open up your eyes, look around, you're home again. It's gonna take a while, realize you're home with friends. You ran to catch a dream, chase your rainbows and when you grabbed a hold, it slipped right from your hand. And a little time to open up your mind. A little time to read between the lines. A little time to start again. A little time to mend your broken dreams. A little time to sew up all those seams. A little time to start again. Take a little time, take a little time. Take a little time, take a little time, take a little time. take a little time, take a little time. Take a little time, take a little time, take a little time.
Ching, ka-ching, ka-ching, ching, ching, ching. LHS Podcast. Take a little time. Ching a ching. Welcome back.
We're back.
Yes, we're back.
Yes, we're back. We're back. We got, all right, we got some stuff. Want to talk about some stuff?
What kind of stuff you got?
I don't know. I got my first thing that I put in the Etherpad because I'm curious about what you got to say about this.
Okay, put it on me.
All right. Here I go. I'm going to lay it on you. Give me your hand. I'm going to give you some skin. Or something. All right. Anyway, this is a debate that I've heard over the years since I've been an amateur radio operator. And it's about if you're in the high frequency bands, 1.8 megahertz up to about 30 megahertz. We're talking about, you know, 160 meters up to, 10 meters, not counting 6 meters and all that kind of stuff. But basically what, you know, what we all widely regard as the HF bands. There's been a debate, or I don't know if it is a debate, but it's been raging in my mind anyway, what the better idea is, whether to have a vertical antenna or to have a horizontal antenna. Now, the one thing that I've heard most of all is that it doesn't really matter because once you get into atmospheric propagation and signals that bounce off the atmosphere, then the polarization of those signals just tends to get jumbled when they go from one point to another point. So the polarization of your antenna tends to not matter so much, but I've seen a lot of stuff in magazines, which seems to indicate that for HF operation, you're better off with a vertical antenna than a horizontal antenna. And as a user of a horizontal, or in my particular case, an inverted V, I'm just kind of wondering if that's really the way to go, or if I should invest in some sort of a multiband vertical. So, Richard, being the guru of all things amateur radio, is going to enlighten us about the difference between vertical and horizontal for HF.
Boy, that was like listening to a junior high school kid. You need to be careful because Brenda's looking to kill some of them.
Did I really sound that amateur?
I'm talking about the timing and meter, okay? I'm not, no.
Okay.
The whole thing, look. It's kind of like this. We can go way nuts, or we can go simple.
Well, start simple, and then if we have to go nuts, we have to go nuts.
The simplest explanation is that most people use horizontal antennas because that is the best way that they have to support the antenna. When you start talking about vertical antennas, quarter wave vertical antennas at 160 meters, that's a huge, well, it's not huge, but it's a long antenna and extremely heavy. Whereas a piece of wire for that particular size antenna, a half wave dipole, it's easier to get enough structures up to put it in that air, and it really doesn't weigh as much. That's the simplest thing. Because of the size, the actual physical size of antennas, the lower you go in the bands, that's one of the reasons that more people use horizontal antennas. Now, the other side of it is that if you are a DXer, vertical antennas provide a lower launch angle for the signal. They have a lower lobe, main lobe, coming off of the antenna, which changes the angle at which they enter the ionosphere, which in a lot of cases will extend the signal further out. Now, as far as which is best, well, it kind of depends. See, you're talking about signals losing polarization in the ionosphere, and that does happen.
Oh, my God. I got something right about radio wave propagation?
Well, I know you had to take at least some of the tests. You know, and the whole point is that this whole 20 dB of attenuation between vertical and horizontal goes away when you start talking about skywave propagation, and you don't just have regular ionospheric D, F layer propagation. You've got other things to take into account. Rural propagation, backscatter, reflectivity off of objects in the air, whether they're meteorites, airplanes, whatever. It's time for Richard's story time, come think of it. A good example, and this was on VHF, a good example is that back in the days, way back in the last century, when Richard was a security guard, which was about time I got licensed, a friend of mine and I worked at places that were equal distance from one of the local airports. And one night we decided to try and talk to each other simplex on our handhelds. We were only probably, I don't know, 8-10 miles apart, and we were using some really good 5-watt handhelds. Best handheld I ever owned was the one I'm talking about now. And we figured out after talking for a while, trying to contact each other, that as the planes were coming in at the airport that was halfway in between us, that the signals were going up and then going down and going up and going down. So we were getting reflectivity off of the bodies of these airplanes, off of these aluminum airplanes. Well, you get the same kind of thing going on with other signals, lower signals too. But as far as trying to get back to the subject of vertical and horizontal, that whole 20 dB attenuation thing, you can throw that out the window with HF, because you can be talking to a guy that's on a vertical and you're running a horizontal antenna and he is the strongest signal on the band to you. And the person right next door to you can be trying to talk to the same guy, and on his horizontal antenna, he won't even be able to hear him. Now, difference is the screw up in the orientation of the polarization of the wave. I've lost my place.
Woohoo!
I do that all the time. Anyway, you're going to hear a lot of guys, and it depends, the discussions that you're going to hear, the arguments you're going to hear for this antenna versus that antenna, chances are you're going to hear the guys preaching horizontal antennas because that's what they use. You're going to hear the guys preaching vertical antennas because that's what they use. It's kind of like, I know a bunch of guys that have gap antennas. Gap antennas are verticals. They're aluminum vertical antennas. Now, they're short because, once again, we start getting into that size thing. So there has to be tricks to make that antenna resonant. Now, it is not beyond the bounds of reason to build a 20-meter vertical antenna out of copper plumbing pipe and getting it up in the air and it being sturdy enough and being able to stabilize the top of it, where you have a full quarter wave antenna in your backyard working HF. But when you get down to 160 meters, a half wave dipole at 160 meters is 260 feet long. 260 feet long. That's 40 feet short of a football field. Now, people say that, and a lot of people have never actually seen a full-size football field. But that's the whole point. 260 feet is how long that dipole is going to be. Half of that's going to be 130 feet. Most amateur radio operators don't even have a tower that high. So it's kind of difficult to get them that far up in there. Thank goodness, when you're talking about antennas that size, you can hang those lower, and you do get some advantage when they're lower for those bands in the area of closer in communication, which is one of the things as far as emergency communicators we've been looking at over the last few years. A good example is at my home in Balch Springs, when I lived there, I had a G5RV on top of a 20-foot mast. Now, G5RV, I believe, is about 105 feet long. And then it's got, like, I think it's a 35-foot matching section, which also becomes a radiator at lower frequencies, 300, 450 ohms, something like that. Anyway, 20 feet. And it just so happened at 20 feet, no, it was up at 30 feet. At 30 feet, it was the right height from the ground to force the takeoff angle of the main lobe up high enough that any time of the day or night, 7 days a week, I could contact the EOC in Austin, Texas, however many miles away it is, 400, 500, 600 miles. Now, it ain't that far, without any problem at all, and have them with a 20 over signal, and them have me with a 20 over signal. And in fact, that same antenna on higher frequencies, because the distance off of the ground relative to the frequencies, I worked on that same antenna, New Caledonia, New Zealand, that kind of stuff on 20 meter PSK. I've got the cards around here somewhere. In fact, my New Caledonia card, the ink got wet and ran. And I'm mad about it.
Well, in the chat room, just to make this more difficult for you, KE5WMA has made a couple of comments. The first being that verticals are good for limited space, which I can see, because if you have a small, if you don't have a yard and you have to put up an antenna, then, I mean, certainly a vertical will give you the easiest way to mount an antenna because it takes up very little, you know, space horizontally. And then he also says that if you're on a budget and you have some space, that you should use a horizontal. But to me, that doesn't answer the question about which is better, vertical or horizontal, or yeah, vertical or horizontal. So, and I know you've sort of been sort of wandering around the horn trying to address the question of which is better, but I don't think you've quite gotten there yet. Do you think either one is better, or do you think they both do adequately for what they are, you know, under the circumstances and the conditions of HF propagation, or do you actually have...
Do you have a freaking opinion, Richard?
Yes. Do you have a choice one way or the other?
I prefer dipoles. I prefer horizontal antennas. Well, they're not exactly horizontal, but here's the whole philosophy behind that. I started out, when I first got into amateur radio, I worked a job where I made minimum wage. I was feeding three kids and old fat gal that wasn't worth crap and wouldn't get a keep a job. So my amateur radio was on a budget. The majority of the antennas I have used, I have built myself out of wire. And even before I was an amateur radio operator, I was building wire antennas. I built my first Delta loop a full 3 years before I got my initial amateur radio license. So I prefer wire. It's cheap. It's easy to work with. If you can use a ruler or tape measure, you can build a wire antenna without a whole lot of problem. And since you can buy pre-built balun and matching networks to go on them, there's a huge variety of wire antennas. Now, having said that, I have also used verticals. I only used one vertical antenna I was ever happy with. I have an AR-10 Ringo Ranger in the garage right now, which is a 10-meter Ringo Ranger. And it was a problem until I got it high enough in the air, and then it became a really good 10-meter antenna. Sure, the commercial-built antennas are going to perform a little better, but when you're looking at antennas, well, it's kind of like this. We were talking about cars a little bit before we got started tonight, and if you're going to move a house full of furniture, you don't want to do it in a Mustang. You want Ford F-350 or whatever the equivalent Chevrolet is. You want this big, huge pickup truck that you can put all this furniture in. But if you're going to pull up at the club and try and impress people, you want a Dodge Viper or something to that effect. The reasoning here is that different antennas excel at different jobs. They are better for different jobs. Some people say that wire antennas are better for short haul contacts inside the continental United States, into Canada, into Mexico, even South America, because we're talking about a different way that the waves come off of that antenna. Now, in the case of vertical antennas, when you can use them, and yes, the point is, if you've got limited space, verticals are better until you get to a certain point, and then they become too big and unwieldy to use. But most of your passionate DXers use vertical antennas, or try to, because it gives them that advantage of a lower takeoff angle to the main lobe of the radiation off that antenna, which for anybody who's ever played pool, bowled, done anything where smaller and larger angles of contact of one item to another. You know, you get that angle spread out, you get a lower takeoff, you get a wider angle when it comes off of the ionosphere, it goes farther out. The skip zone changes, for those of y'all who are familiar with skip zone. But then again, that's not going to do you a whole lot of good if you've got a lot of sporadic E going on and you're really high up in frequency, because that's going to block it and knock it right back at you. So it's kind of like this. You wouldn't drive a screw with a 22 millimeter wrench. You wouldn't hammer a nail with your firstborn child. But these things have jobs you can do with them. 22 millimeter wrench, you can take a drain plug out of a Ford pickup truck. And the child, well, I haven't really found a use for any of mine, but I'm sure there is one. So is that any closer to what you're looking for?
Well, I don't know that I was looking for anything in particular. Although, let me say one thing in the case of a horizontal antenna as opposed to a vertical antenna. One thing about vertical antennas is you do have a lower angle of radiation, particularly if you have a very good ground plane. A lot of people who put up vertical antennas, you know, sort of go with that paradigm. They ignore the ground plane. They think, and a lot of these vertical antennas will actually claim, oh, you don't need a ground plane. But honestly, if you want an effective radiating antenna, you need a ground plane. And basically, this can just be as simple as running a bunch of wires out on the ground or slightly underground, connected to the ground side of your antenna. Creating that ground plane gives you much better radiation. That being said, in the realm of horizontal antennas have directionality. Vertical antennas are omnidirectional, at least as far as radiating across the globe is concerned, because they're vertically oriented, and so the path of the emission is basically in every direction out from the antenna. Now, horizontal antennas don't do that. They radiate along the wires that create the antenna. So the reason I bring this up is if you happen to be, say, in the center of the United States, say Kansas, for instance, you want to have more effective radiation to the east and west, then you would run your wires east and west, because the effective radiation coming off of that antenna will be along, you know, the path of the wires. If you orient your antennas so the wires go north and south, then your signal will be stronger to the north and south, and you will effectively put California and Maine to the sides of your horizontally oriented antenna. So if this is if having a horizontal antenna is sort of a new concept for you, just make sure that, you know, what the direction that you think is more interesting to you is the one in which you align the direction of your antenna. I believe I have said this correctly in alignment with proper radio propagation theory. And if I haven't, Richard will speak up now and tell me how stupid I am.
Well, no. I would never do that. But you do realize that you're pushing AC through the wire of the antenna, correct?
Well, right. I mean, maybe people don't understand that you're actually running power.
Yeah, I'm getting there, Ted.
Okay. Well, go ahead. I mean, since you're all having a private conversation that I'm not a part of, go ahead and explain what you're talking about.
In the case of a wire, when you pass electricity through a wire or any other kind of component, you get a electromagnetic field, or you get a magnetic field at a right angle to the electrical field. So if you're running the energy down the wire, you're getting a magnetic field to the side of the wire or perpendicular to the wire. So in the case of horizontal antenna, and this, it's not Nick. I don't want it to sound like nitpicking. Don't get mad at me, Russ. You're broadside to your antenna. So if you point the elements north and south, your radiation pattern is to the east and west, but not always, because there's always different ways to do this stuff. And if you, with a dipole, just a regular old dipole, everyday run-of-the-mill dipole,
It radiates best, or we're told it radiates best, at a quarter of a wave off the ground, quarter wavelength. And if you move it down, and in some cases you'll get it, this NBIS effect by moving the antenna closer to the ground, normally about an eighth wave. But also, as you bring the antenna down and it's in contact with the ground starts to interfere with the radiation pattern. And in some cases, lowering that antenna down can give you an omnidirectional pattern. Now, as far as receiving, it's been so long since I read up on that part of it, I'm not sure. Okay, but well, as far as radiation pattern, it would give you more of an omnidirectional pattern. Now, in the go ahead, and then I got something else.
Okay, well, I think I wasn't terribly clear about what I said, and let me see if I remember my theory correctly. But basically, if your antenna is oriented east and west, yes, I understand that the radiation is north and south. In other words, you create a ring that expands north and south. However, they travel east and west along the path of the antenna, meaning that someone who is east of you, who has an antenna that is also oriented east and west, the best reception you're going to get is when the polarizations match, i.e. the radio wave that comes off of your antenna perpendicularly intersects an antenna that is also receiving it. So an antenna that is oriented in the same way as your antenna will receive better than one that is oriented at some other angle. Am I correct?
But see, that's when we get into the funny things that waves do when they enter the ionosphere, because when it changes, the polarization changes orientation because of bouncing around in the ionosphere. It may go in as horizontal. It may come out vertical, horizontal, sideways, backways. It could come out circular. And it, whenever you bounce a signal off of something, you distort that wave. I can't think of a good analogy on this, but it that's the whole point. So if it bounces off the ionosphere, now, if we're talking about ground wave propagation, and we don't talk a lot about ground wave propagation nowadays in HF, which is extremely usable, very, very, very usable. And the further down you go in frequency, the smaller your skip zone becomes. And when you get down 75, some places on 75, and even as far as down as 160, you have no noticeable skip zone. You go directly from ground wave to sky wave, or at least it appears that way if you go down far enough. Yes, if you've got two antennas that are talking to each other, okay, so you're 40 miles away from, that's a good idea. If you're on 40 meters and you're 40 miles away from somebody and they're using a vertical antenna and you're using a horizontal antenna, you may not hear them at all. Or you may hear them very, very quietly. But if you pitch one of those antennas over to the other orientation, they'll come up where you can at least hear what they're saying, read the signal, even though it may not register on your signal strength meter. And the only reason I use this as an example is the former section traffic manager for North Texas lives about 40 miles away from me. And when she and I would be working one of the 40 meter traffic nets, most of the time I couldn't hear her because she had a vertical antenna that somebody had put up for her, and I was running horizontal. But as far as at long distances, if you've got at least one hop in there, then polarization of the wave really doesn't make, it's not going to be logical. It's not like he's vertical, I'm vertical, so we ought to have better reception, or he's vertical and I'm horizontal, so we know it's going to get horizontal when it comes through, and that works better. Sometimes it do, sometimes it don't.
I think I jumbled up what I said over the course of my discussion in the sense that when I first started talking about the fact of when you skip a signal off the atmosphere at least once, then polarization goes out the window because you can't really predict what the polarization is going to be at the receiving station. You may be close to the same polarization that it came off the originating antenna, you may be completely different. Therefore, the orientation of your antenna is simply a matter of luck. Now, when I discussed whether your horizontal is pointed east and west, that I was talking about basically point-to-point communication, having no skip in there at all. In other words, if you're talking about like VHF propagation, or, you know, when you have a 2 meter radio in your car and you're talking to a 2 meter radio in somebody else's car that's close by or via repeater, all of those antennas are oriented vertically because there's no change in polarity in those signals because there's no effective bounce off the atmosphere. You're talking about going from where you are to the repeater to the other station, or basically simplex to the other station. Therefore, your best reception is going to be if your antennas are similarly polarized. If you're vertical and the other person is horizontal and you're 5 miles apart, the chances of you hearing each other is very small. If you both happen to be vertical, your chances of hearing each other are much better. But once you get into bouncing signals off the atmosphere or the moon or any other propagation where the polarity of the signal can change at random, then it doesn't really matter that much.
Right. I mean, that's what I was talking about a while ago. The difference between a horizontal antenna and a vertical antenna, if you're trying to talk to each other off of one that's pointed one way and one that's pointed the other, is I believe it's 20 dB. I'm sure Ted will straighten me out if I'm wrong. But 20 dB attenuation between horizontal and vertical. Okay. And 5 miles away, well, definitely you wouldn't hear each other. I'm pretty sure, unless you were running a huge amount of power. Because it's just that much. And this is one of the things we exploit when we're doing transmitter hunting. But what I was going back to on the wire antennas is a dipole, inverted V, whatever, that's horizontally polarized. If you're putting, as far as the wire's concerned, you're going to be broadside to the antenna, because we utilize, even though the AC goes into the antenna, we utilize the magnetic component of that electromagnetic field. And the magnetic component comes off at a right angle to the conductor. Does that make any sense?
It does make sense. I do believe that what I am saying is correct in my head, but only in the sense of true ground wave propagation, one where the orientation of the signal doesn't change between the transmitting and the receiving endpoints.
I think we're probably talking about two different things.
Yeah, we probably are. And once you have the atmosphere relaying signals in the middle of the mix, then all bets are off as far as polarization of your antenna. But we're getting way far afield here. So do you have a thought about whether horizontal is better than vertical, or do you think it doesn't really matter?
Well, it's like I was saying earlier, horizontal antennas, vertical antennas, a dipole versus an infed ZEP, collinear vertical as opposed to a 5/8 wave vertical. They all do different jobs. They're all good at different jobs. But as far as all in one antenna, something you're going to use every day to sit around a rag chew, my money, because I'm cheap, is on wire antennas, because like I said, they're cheap to build. I've built way more than my fair share of wire antennas for a $5 bill or $7. I mean, even the loop antennas can be horizontally polarized, and they're still are vertically polarized and still quieter than a vertically polarized, I don't know, quarter wave antenna, gap or something like that. That's the benefits of some of this stuff. I mean, you take a horizontally polarized antenna, it picks up a lot less man-made noise. A loop antenna picks up even less. The advantage of a loop antenna is it can be kicked over where it's vertically polarized and still be a loop antenna. We see them in commercial, the folded dipoles on these commercial VHF, UHF antennas that a lot of guys use on their repeaters. They're folded dipoles, but they're closed loops, so they're quieter. So, you know, for my money, wire's better, unless you've got the money to do it right. and put a good tower structure up that can support what you need, and then go out and get the aluminum and put it in the air and do it the right way.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at a good, you know, like tunable multiband commercial vertical antenna, you're talking 400 and up, easy. That's without mounts, towers, or anything. And if you just want to put a 80 to 10 multiband vertical that runs 2-to-1 and easily covers every band, including work with a tuner, $100 or less. So, I mean, clearly there's a cost differential there that might sway a person one way or the other.
Well, I mean, Barker and Williams makes an all band folded dipole that's in the $350 to $400 range. I think that's what it was last time I looked at it, $350 to $400. And, I mean, this is a commercially made folded dipole, which, will work. I think it works 160 to 10. It may just be a 75 or 80 to 10. You know, you can get expensive that way too. But for your average amateur radio operator, you'll spend $15, $20, $25 on a balun. And I'm not a strong advocate of balun, but I have seen a little bit of a difference using them as opposed to not using them. If you don't use them, you can build an antenna for $5, $6, $7. If you go ahead and use them, you add another $25, $30 to the bill, but still you're under the price of even a commercially made dipole. Cause I haven't checked those lately, but, them guys want a lot of money for the little bit of materials and work there is involved in putting those things together.
All right. So I think we've had a 35-minute discussion that came out with no answer whatsoever. What do you think?
Well, no, the answer is all antennas have different purposes. You know, it's like I said earlier, if you're going to move a bunch of furniture out of your apartment to a new house, you're not going to try and drag it down the street in a Geo, you know, or a Kia. You're going to want somebody, you won't want your buddy has got the big Ford or Chevy pickup to come over and y'all load the crap in there. It's the same way with antennas. The best general purpose all around antennas I've seen, well, you know, I stayed away from G5RV for a long time. And then when Brenda started getting upset because it looked like Marconi's station around our place, because I had a separate dipole for every band I worked hanging off of that house, I went ahead and went with a G5RV. Yes, there was, the performance wasn't as good, but to be everything, be able to work everything, all the bands off of one antenna, it was worth it in that situation. You know, if you got the money, like I said, put the aluminum in there, man. You know, more money's better. If you're going to spend $1 on your radio, spend $2 on your antenna system. That's what I was told when I first got licensed.
Oh, I feel bad now. I looked in the chat room and KD8SZG, who's joined us tonight, and I want to thank, I'm going to assume it's a him, for joining us tonight. He says, as someone looking to get into HF, I'm all messed up now. Well, maybe let's take a quick break. We've got a few more things we want to talk about. We can maybe address any specific questions he has after the break about antennas one way or the other. So let's continue this after the break, and then we'll finish up with that. What do you think?
Yeah, the other thing can be pushed off till next week. It's just something that's been on my mind.
Well, whatever we get to, we'll get to. I mean,
I'm just saying that. No, I'm not griping. I'm saying it's best we can push. How do I tell you it's okay to push something off without you thinking I'm mad?
I don't think you're mad.
Okay.
All right.
Play the music.
All right. We're going to play the music. This one here is a song called Metal Heart, and it's by a group called Zamza, Z-A-M-Z-A. This is a pretty good one, so I'm going to fire it up here, and when this one's over, we're going to address KD8SCG's problem with HF antennas that we've totally blown his mind about this discussion, and maybe fit in some feedback and another discussion about my little Yaesu mobile rig that I really want to vent about. So we'll see you in a couple of seconds on the other side.
I don't
And we are back to a thoroughly mind-blowing session of Linux in the Ham Shack. We have lost all the Linux guys by now, and we are persevering and moving on because we have just exploded all the synapses on some of the folks listening in the chat room, and now we're going to talk some more about antennas. So we'll have to try again next week with some Linux-y kind of stuff. But that may not happen either. We'll have to see what happens. So we're back. We are back. We have maximum backness. And baby, say something, Buzz, because I'm gone idiot.
Well, I'll tell you what. Before we get back into the whole horizontal, dipole, vertical, multi-trap, super aluminum wire, ladder line discussion that we've been having, let me go ahead and talk about my Yaesu FT7900R. Have you seen this radio?
No, I hadn't really looked at it. I've been looking at other stuff because I'm fixing to start flailing on some people about 70 centimeters.
Okay. Well, the 7900R is a dual bander, 2 meter, 70 centimeter, and it's a nice little radio. I mean, I have no issue whatsoever with the 7900R as a good mobile rig. That does what it does. I believe it's 50 or 60 watts, 2 meters, probably 35 or 50 watts on 70 centimeters. It's got the typical Yaesu orange glow when you plug it in and all that kind of thing. Well, here's my problem with it. I put in the Etherpad my Yaesu FT7900R in the engineering fallacy, and you added a question mark. Now, did you add the question mark just because you were being cute, or do you actually not understand what my problem is with this radio?
I have no idea what the engineering fallacy is, and I couldn't find it on the internet.
Okay, well, here's the engineering fallacy, and this is the same thing that I have, the same problem that I have with cars, especially modern cars. Here's the thing. You take your average car, a newer car. Well, okay, let's start a different way. You take your average older car. Let's say you have a 1972 Chrysler New Yorker or something like that. If you were to walk up to this car, throw open the hood, you could probably figure out what every little piece under that bonnet. Oh boy, I've been watching too much British TV. Too much Top Gear. You could probably figure out everything that's under that hood and what it does. And if you needed to fix it, you could probably go to your local parts store, buy the part, and put it on yourself. Am I correct in this so far?
Okay.
Okay. If you take your average 2012 vehicle, you pop the hood open. Now, once you get through 37 different plastic shrouds and serpentine belts and wires that go to 7,000 different places and all that stuff, you take one look at the engine and have no idea what exactly you're looking at. Okay, well, this is what I call the engineering fallacy. You're looking at a piece of, what is probably a very high-tech piece of equipment that is, from an engineering standpoint, well-engineered. In other words, everything is efficient, everything is tightly packed, but if you actually pop the hood open on one of these things and you're a mechanic trying to fix it, you are in no man's land because it's going to take you 37 hours to get down to the one part that you have to fix in order to get this thing to work properly, even though it's a masterpiece of engineering. So that's the engineering fallacy.
So you broke it.
No. So here's the thing. So I think the 7900R is probably a very well-engineered piece of radio hardware. Here's where the mechanic part of it comes into it. I'm trying to mount this thing into my truck, and it comes with the YSX 7800 remote head unit add-on kit so that you can take the head unit off the main part of the radio, mount it like to your dashboard, and then put the main part of the radio somewhere else hidden so that all you have to look at is just that one little piece, so you can stick it onto your dashboard with Velcro and not have to deal with the main body of the radio. And the engineering side of this says, this is the best way you can do that. Or this is the best way to handle that, because then you can mount this, you know, the head unit anywhere and don't have to worry about where you put the radio itself and the antenna connector and all that kind of thing. So it makes it very easy for the end user to mount this thing. Well, the problem is the microphone connector for the radio is actually on the head unit piece, so that when you disassemble or you disassociate the head unit from the radio and mount this thing on your dashboard, you're still able to plug your microphone right into the head unit and you can keep the radio hidden. Okay, perfect. However, the speaker is mounted to the main body of the radio. So if you decide to put the main body of the radio under a seat or, you know, stow it away in a console or under the dashboard or something like that, you can't hear the damn radio because the speaker is not attached to the head unit. It's actually in the main radio. This is retarded. Okay. This should have been designed so that all of the necessary pieces of the radio, the parts that you have to have exposed to the user, i.e. the microphone, the LCD display, and the audio, are attached to the unit that you actually mount to the dashboard. And then the rest of it can be stuck under a seat or under the dashboard or hidden away or whatever. They didn't decide to do that. And I think this is absolutely stupid. And I would just like to use this opportunity to send this message to Yaesu: smarten up. Okay. That's all I had to say about that.
Well, as an audio guy, what happens when you make a speaker smaller?
Okay. Now, I knew this was going to come up, but the thing of it is, Apple, and I hate to bring up Apple in the context of this conversation, but Apple has done an exemplary job of creating loud, powerful, dynamic speakers that recreate full audio range sound. We're talking 20 hertz up to 18 kilohertz, full audio sound from very small speakers that could easily have been integrated into the head unit of this radio that would be loud enough to be heard, that would not sound tinny, and that could easily have been put in there and associated just with the head unit. So I don't buy the argument that I think you're coming up with, that you have to mount the speaker into the body of the radio just because you have to have a bigger full-bodied speaker in order to accurately reproduce the sound. I don't think that's valid.
Well, Yaesu's got crappy speakers in the first place. That's why I stuck with Kenwood for so long. Yaesu and Icom have the worst speakers on their rigs. They are horrible. And when you've got hearing loss the direction I've got it, it's extra bad because they don't have a lot of low frequencies. Now, I'm looking at this radio right now on the Yaesu website. And even if they did have a small speaker to put somewhere, I do not see where they would put it because there's not a lot of room on the front of this thing.
No, that's actually true. But the expansion kit that comes free when you buy this radio, the YSX 7800, whatever the hell they call it, actually creates a gap between whatever you mount the head unit to and the back of the head unit. So you could actually mount the speaker on the back of the head unit and have it directed against the, your dashboard or whatever with about a half an inch of space. And I believe that would be more than adequate to produce accurate sound.
And where is the audio plug on this thing? In the back?
Yes.
Why don't you just plug a cable into it?
But I don't want to have to go out and buy an additional speaker. Why should I have to pay for a separate speaker to mount somewhere else?
Come get one of these speakers I got.
That's not the point.
I got speakers. For 20 years now, every time I throw away a stereo, I keep the speakers.
I want the sound to come out of the head unit of my radio. If I'm going to spend hundreds of dollars on a piece of equipment, I want the audio and the head unit and the microphone connector to be, to be attached to the same piece of hardware. And that's what I want. I don't want to have to run a 20-foot long piece of, eighth inch audio cable to another speaker that I have to buy from someplace just to hear my freaking radio. I'm sorry, Yezu, you've done this completely wrong. This is totally BS.
Your radio in your car doesn't have an auxiliary plug?
That's not the damn point.
Holy crap. Well, let me tell you something. Over the nearly 25 years, I don't know, I've kind of lost count. I think it's 24. Over the 24 years that I have been licensed, I have desperately fought against radios with removable heads. There is no reason for it. If you're going to have a damn radio, hang it under the dash. I have stayed away from them. I wouldn't have one now if it wasn't for the fact that the one ICOM radio that I felt that I had a weak moment and felt that I absolutely had to have has a detachable head. However, I don't use the remote kit. If I decided to do so, the cigarette lighter plug is located right next to where I mount my radios in the truck, and I have a device that I use for my audio players, which creates a FM signal to transfer from the device in the cigarette plug to the radio. Now, nobody puts speakers in the head.
Well, they should start putting speakers in the head. I have a vehicle that I cannot mount my radio underneath the dash. There's not enough room. There's nothing to mount it to. And my ability to separate the head from the main body of the radio is actually the reason I bought this radio. But the fact that the speaker is contained in the main body of the radio makes this completely, completely useless to me. So
maybe we should start a letter writing campaign.
That's right. We should.
So we do it this way. We do it. Yeah, you need to contact them and bitch their ass out about this.
Badger.
Why did you sell me a damn radio with a removable head?
Doesn't it make sense? Okay. Just on a philosophical level, if you, you may not want a radio that has a removable head. Okay. You want a radio that's a radio and all of the pieces are built into it. And that's the end of the story. Okay. Fine. I get that. But if you're going to build a radio that has a removable head, shouldn't the removable head part of the radio have everything in it that you need to operate the radio? That's the thing that bugs me about this. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to figure out some way to get this damn thing to work, because I spent like 300 and some friggin' amount of money on it. And I'm going to make this radio work, but it still pisses me off. And Yezu and whoever else has decided to do this kind of thing where they separate the head and keep the speaker in the main body of the radio, you're all idiots and you need to redesign.
But where are they going to put the readout?
Put the speaker in the back.
In the back of the radio? It's already there.
In the back of the head.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I think what we need to do, everybody within the sound of our voice, and we know there's quite a few of you, and there might even be some in Japan, because I know there's some in China. Hell yeah, you may be in China now, or something. They make really good electronics over there. everybody within the sound of my voice, write a nasty letter to Yezu. Ask them why the hell the head ain't got a speaker in it. Ain't got no speaker. Probably because it got all them damn buttons on the front.
And here's another thing. Here's another damn thing that I just thought of while you were making that point.
Just another damn thing.
That's just another damn thing. If you can't bother to put a speaker in the back of the head, then don't bother with putting a speaker in the back of the head. Put a speaker in the damn microphone. That technology has been around forever and ever. You could buy one of those damn things for $29 to go into your HTX 202 20 frickin' years ago. If you wanted to hear the audio coming out of your microphone, and that'd be just as damn good.
Speaker mics really suck.
I don't care. As long as that speaker's not in the body of the radio, I don't care where the audio comes from.
Everybody write a letter about speaker mics, speakers in the head. I can understand. I can feel it. I can feel what you're saying. I can understand this.
Well, I'm glad you can understand.
Because all my friends are nuts. Why should you be any different?
That's right. All right. Do you want to address Katie?
I know guys that mount APRS radios in their trunk. Go figure. Yeah. However, the upside of this whole ordeal is the fact that at Universal Radio, they have a Yaesu external speaker for $45.95,
yeah.
which is supposed to.
Don't start on me. I already paid for the goddamn radio. I don't want to have to pay for another speaker.
Well, you know, I bought a Yaesu HF rig, a little off topic. I bought a Yaesu HF rig and bought the matching antenna tuner to go with it. And it won't tune anything that's more than 3:1. Okay. If you're 3:1, you don't need no damn tuner, but it wouldn't tune anything. So I've still got it somewhere around here in the box, and I had to go buy another tuner for a couple $100 to put on there that will tune everything. I can hook it up to my dog and it will tune the dog. So there you go. Universal Radio, $45.95. Failing that, everybody write a tacky letter to every company that you ever did business with that doesn't put speakers in the removable head for their radios and tell them that Russ said, bite me. Bite me. We haven't done bite me in a while.
That's right.
We haven't done bite me in a while. All right. How much time do we have left?
Oh, I think about negative 30 minutes. So do you want to address...
crap.
Yeah. You want to address KD8SCG's confusion about antennas, or you just want to wrap it up?
Well, he's talking about stuff in here, and I can see a situation. We'll talk about that in a minute. KD8SZG, pay attention. Are you paying attention? Okay. In the chat room, he says he's got like a place where he can put an antenna up about 40 feet off the ground, and by the attachment points would be about 200 feet apart. And that kind of stuff. Now, I saw a congratulations someplace, which leads me to believe that he is recently hamified, or maybe they're just congratulating him on his huge amount of space, because I would like a situation like that. I've never had that much room. Of course, I did have a 50-foot pole up over the top of my house in Grand Prairie. Used my feed line as part of the conductor. Yeah, you can do the stuff they tell you not to do, and it works sometimes. KD8SZG, are you new ham or an old ham? New a month. Okay. Now we're going to go into resonant frequency mode. Are you ready? Being a new ham radio operator, it's always best to start small and work your way up. I say this because some of these people will go out gung-ho when they first get started. They'll spend huge amounts of money on equipment that really doesn't perform for them the way they want it to or need it to. So what I would suggest is that you start with a middle of the road or low end wire antenna. If you're not going to build it yourself, then and they are incredibly simple to build. So you probably need to look into that. I saw somebody mention the, Wire Antenna Classics book. Just about anything written by W1FB is good. I started off with one of his books back years ago when I was building wire antennas on different bands that we don't talk about, and work your way up. This gives you the ability to build what you want, test it. If it doesn't work, you're not out that much. When you go to reuse wire off the 75-meter antenna that didn't work right, you can make a 40-meter antenna out of it or 20-meter antenna out of it and all this stuff. It doesn't hurt to learn how to build these types of antennas. The other side of it is, if you're just into it for talking to your buddies on the repeater, commercially made, I don't know, Comet antenna or a Cushcraft, something like that, a Ringo Ranger. I don't even know if they make the Ringo Rangers anymore. Ringo Ranger or a GP3 or GP6 or GP9, one of those. If you're going to look towards DXing and stuff like that, you may want to go ahead and move towards beam. But, you know, I've gradually learned my amateur radio, mostly because I didn't have a lot of money to throw down into it. To this very day, I've had multi-band vertical antennas and never really had a whole lot of luck with them.
but I can throw together even out on a deployment with Aries and Races, because I've done it during drills, put together a usable antenna in less than an hour and get it up and going. Well, see, that's a start right there. Building J-poles. That's a good start. So you go down to the Lowe's or the Home Depot. If you decide to go this route, go down to the Lowe's or the Home Depot, buy a spool of wire, 14, 18 gauge, depending on how much power you're going to put through it. You know, you don't want too small if you're going to go ahead and load yourself up with an amplifier. Get online, find you some good silver chassis mount connectors. If you're going to use Balans, there's several good places to get those. Don't do commercials for people that don't give me money, but I do feel that it's okay for me to say that I buy parts from Universal Radio. I buy most of my stuff from Universal Radio, mainly because Texas Tower is a bunch of jerks, and I know these guys personally. And I'll probably get a letter for that. I got to eat out over a comment about the Dallas Amateur Radio Club. Get you some connectors, get you some cable, get you some wire. If you got trees 200 feet apart and you can get that antenna 40 feet in there, oh, yeah. You probably want to reinforce that feed point, because once you get the weight of that coax pulling down on it, you really need to do something. Well, there you go. And they ship really good. Does that answer most of your questions, since we're talking to you without anybody else hearing what you're saying? Yes, fence wire. Fence wire is good. Corrodes kind of quick, but it's good. Does that clear up? He says, yeah, it sounds good to me. Does that clear up a little bit of your confusion? When you showed up, we were probably getting into stuff that was kind of deep. Well, fence wire is easy. It'll take solder real good. I mean, it's good, it's strong, but you're still talking about where the feed point is and where the antenna is the weakest, so you probably need to still reinforce it. While you're down there at the tractor supply or feed store, or wherever you get the fence wire, make sure you get yourself some insulators. Electric fence insulators, for the most part, will work as good as some of the high-dollar bone and poly insulators. What you do, and they're pretty cheap, so you can do this, is you get some, take them home, put two or three on a plate and stick them in the microwave and turn the microwave on for a few minutes. When the microwave is finished, you take them out and pick them up. Now, if they don't scorch the flesh on your hand, then they will be proper insulators for your antenna. If they are hot, they burn your hand when they come out of the microwave, then you need to try a different type. Because RF's a little bit different than regular electricity, but not much. In fact, I got several bags over here. I picked up a tractor supply real cheap, and they work really well. And I would think that would be crap, but when I did finally buy a G5 RV that someone else had built, it had the same insulators on the end of it. Ooh, barbed wire. Barbed wire would be good. Probably make the lobes kind of strange. I don't know about that. Has anybody modeled an antenna dipole with barbed wire?
4-point or 5-point?
We only use 2 down here.
We don't use 2 up here. We use 4.
Our cows are not vicious.
Our cows are not our own.
Of course, we have some crazy ass goats around here. Okay. Yeah, there you have it. Okay, so does that help out? How do you like Richard's little pointer about the electric fence insulators? How you like that?
That was truly epic.
It was Hamish.
That's right.
Did it ever dawn on you, even checking them to see if they scorch your hands?
Well, no, I don't throw a lot of badger like that in the microwave.
Microwave's a transmitter.
Yeah, I realize that.
And if they don't conduct the microwaves, they don't conduct the other. Unless, of course, they get wet.
Well, I'll tell you what, we don't have time for anything else. We got to move on.
Well, that's why I was saying we can just push it back to the next one. You know, it's been on my mind and everything. In fact, I got I'm going to give it another shot. I got my extra class question pool sitting here on my desk. I'm about 4 pages from finishing up having it doctored up so I can start studying. And we're going to go ahead and get that out of the way because Richard Fields need to generate some ham radio operators out here where I'm living. And the only way, the best way to do that is to give some tests. So we're going to be working on that, and I'll keep y'all updated on it. We really need to throw them Black Sparrow guys off the website.
Quit hitting the damn refresh.
Arr. Oh, no. They're leaving us. They're leaving us.
Well, that's okay because we're leaving them.
This damned old notification thing gets on my last nerve. Every time they post something, I can't read the bottom of the X-Chat. Old crappy thing.
Well, I'll tell you what. I guess I want to thank everybody for showing up in the chat room tonight, showing up on the live stream. I haven't even checked to see if anybody's actually listening, but... since Richard and I don't know how to shut the hell up, I think it's about time that we get out of here. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think we do that. Y'all, for those of y'all listening on the feed, if you'll go over to chat room, they are continuing to talk about antennas over there. You know, all hams that have been around a while want to help the new guys when they show up. And in fact, they'll tell them 800 different ways to do stuff. And some of them will even be right. So y'all go on over there, and if you're not sure where it is, go on over to freenode.net and look for the LHS podcast chat room and join in the discussion. So with that, we're going to have to go ahead and shut her down for this evening. I think we beat antennas just as much as we can beat antennas, and it's probably more information than y'all ever wanted to know about antennas. And y'all send us some feedback and let us know if Richard's out of his mind or not, because I think I've had, I don't know if I've had my own stroke or borrowed one, but sometimes I worry about it. Anyway, if you want to get a hold of me, send me an email at kb5jbv@gmail.com, kb5jbv@gmail.com, or follow me on the social networks. Still got a few of them going, Twitter, Facebook. I've booted Diaspora the other day, but Google Plus is still working. So y'all give me a shout. And with that, we'll toss it up to the Booby Mountains and no, the Misty Mountains. Wait a minute. We're doing Tolkien tonight. To the Misty Mountains in Arkansas, where Russ will give you his information.
All right, folks. This is Russ, K5TUX. You can find me on all the social networks out there, including Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook, and all the rest, including Identica. I'm J.R. Woodman, also known as K5TUX at 73s.org. Go ahead and send us an email if you want to contact the show at info@lhspodcast.info. Go ahead and send us a voicemail at 1-909-547-7469. That's 1-909-LHS-SHOW. We'll play your comment on the air unless you tell us not to, in which case we won't. Go to the website, lhspodcast.info. Leave us a comment. We'll talk about it on the show. Sign up for the mailing list. Become a donor. Become a subscriber. Click on all of the affiliate links and any advertising you see on the website, because every little bit helps us out, and we appreciate it very much. And I think that's about all there is for me up here in the pine forest between the peaks of... Hello. In the pine forest between the peaks of north central Arkansas, this has been episode number 91 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We'll catch you all in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to send it back down to the Trinity River Basin, where Richard's going to sign off by giving us these little words of wisdom.
Well, I'm just starting to think it that Russ is apparently lost somewhere in Mordor. Well, that's it for this time. Long but fun. And from a high top, the Tower of Orthanc, in the vicinity of Mordor and Middle Earth, I'm going to try and get these pokey bits out of my butt. We'll see y'all next time. Hey, somebody send in the Eagles.